Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. The Mountain Life is a weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle in general. This morning, we first speak with Travis and Shawnee Bray. They're the founders of the Hereditary Colon Cancer Foundation, and it's the third year anniversary of the foundation and the second year since they relocated to Park City.
Then we explore the possible benefits as well as negative impacts from use of medical marijuana with Dr. David Casserette. He's the author of Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana.
All that coming up this hour. Stay with us. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center, a not-for-profit community hospital and a proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Medical Center is one of the premier hospitals for orthopedic surgery and follow-up care. Whether you need your hip, knee, shoulder, ankle, or elbow fixed, our team of skilled physical therapists can help you regain your strength and get you back to your active lifestyle. Our physical therapists have access to the latest technology and equipment, like an anti-gravity treadmill and a SwimX therapy pool. We also offer free assessments for physical and occupational therapy. Call 435-658-7350 to make an appointment.
Assemble is proud to be a KPCW underwriter. Assemble offers executive offices which can be rented on a long or short-term basis, or a business lounge membership located in New Park. More information on the web at assembleparkcity.com or 435-709-7888.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, it's been 2 years since the Hereditary Colon Cancer Foundation arrived in Park City, and we last spoke with the founders, Travis and Shawnee Bray. Oh, 2 years ago. The foundation now is thriving. Life is good, and Travis and Shawnee now join us to share the tale of what has taken place for them and the foundation over the last 24 months in Park City. Travis and Shawnee, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you for having us on.
Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back, and it's really nice to see success of a nonprofit and one that you both are so passionate about. And Travis, why don't you start by telling us the story, as you did a couple years ago, of how you got involved in this?
So there's one form of a hereditary colon cancer that runs in my family, and it's what the foundation was originally started under. The familial adenomatous polyposis is the name of the disease. We call it FAP. So I'm third generation. My grandfather was the first person to have it, and he found out when he was 36 years old. And the way he found out was he had stage 4 colon cancer, and at the same time found out that 3 of his 6 children likely had the same disease. It runs 50-50 through families. So building upon our family history, our doctors were able to prescribe the preventative screening and the treatment necessary. I had my colon removed when I was 15 years old. So there's a lot of talk right now about breast cancer and mastectomies. People that have hereditary forms of colon cancer typically have colectomies. And in the case of my disease, it's usually in your late teens, or commonly in your late teens. So I had my colectomy and learned, kind of grew into a new normal for me, a new body, and had about 20 years of really good life. Went to college, did all the things that normal people do. There was, no one ever walked up to me and said, "You look like you have a disease." Like, I was just a normal guy. And then in my mid-30s, I got sick again. And without, going into the gross details of it, it was really an ordeal of steadily more invasive procedures and screening techniques to try and figure out what was wrong with me. It was the same age that my grandfather had died. It was a year after my dad had died. It was a really scary time for us. And it was a time that I actually started paying attention to other people that had my disease. And started noticing these just gross gaps in services for patients. So a lot of them have a hard time finding doctors in general. They're rare diseases, so they have a hard time finding other people that have their disease. The education out there is pretty limited for the patients. So there was a lot of gaps in the services and resources for patients. And when I finally kind of came out of my spell of chronic illness and got better, was just kind of stricken with all the ways that we could serve this community, and kind of had this idea that if you have the ability and you have the knowledge, then you have the obligation. And so I quit my job as a chemist. I was working at Argonne National Lab outside of Chicago. quit my job and started the organization to try and affect this community.
And so did you come to Salt Lake because of the level of care, or come to Park City because of the level of care in Salt Lake? Was that one of the reasons?
Well, indirectly, yes. So in Salt Lake is the Huntsman Cancer Institute, and they are really the flagship for hereditary colon cancer. One of our board members is Randy Burt, and he was the clinical researcher who discovered the genetic link to FAP. And so kind of indirectly, because of the work that the Huntsman Cancer Institute has done, perhaps is why Myriad Genetics is also located right there in the research park near Huntsman. Mm-hmm. And I was actually invited by Myriad Genetics as a patient advocate to come with a bunch of other groups and discuss genetic testing and the landscape of that. And I mean, spent 3 days at Hotel Park City and just fell in love with it. And we used the opportunity, because of the medical professionals at Huntsman Cancer, to set up some meetings with them and try and draw them onto our board. And we did, which was a really cool story. We drew them onto our board, and Shawnee came out with me for that, and we came up to Park City and kind of fell in love with the area. This probably you want to jump in on.
Just professionally, it made sense. This is, you know, Salt Lake City is definitely a hub for advancements in research and care for hereditary colon cancer. So professionally, it made sense. But to be honest, I wasn't sold on Salt Lake necessarily. I thought it made good business sense. But once we spent a few days here, obviously fell in love with Park City, and then it made personal sense as well. So the move was real easy to make.
So Shawnee, just to carry on with the story of the foundation, because Travis is telling us his story and growing into his new body and the new normal that he discovered. You've had 3 years with the foundation, and there's been great transformation in the foundation. You relocated to Park City, you've changed the name, and you are thriving. You've been part of Live PC, Give PC. Can you walk us through kind of some of the details of the transformation of the organization?
Sure. Living in Chicago, obviously a big city, we thought that there would be tremendous opportunity for support, both financial support as well as business support and advice and mentoring. But the reality is it's hard to get attention there when you're small and it's such a big city. So we were, I would say, floundering a little bit and trying to find resources and learn how to grow into a successful nonprofit. But once we moved here, at every corner we turn, every person we meet, it feels like, offers advice or introduces us to someone. So whether they're in the nonprofit sector or for-profit, people are constantly asking, what do you do? And then the sentence or the conversation immediately leads to, how can I help in one form or another, whether it's advice, introductions, connections, making donations of, you know, gift cards to events we have. It just feels like hands are constantly being extended to us, and it's made a tremendous difference in our growth.
And Travis, you talked about your elevator pitch, and with the old name of the foundation, which I don't remember what it was, quite honestly, but when we talked to you 2 years ago, you had a different name, mm-hmm. and you've changed the name of the foundation. And what's happened since you changed it? And sort of being new at this, you must have learned that there was a benefit to an effective elevator pitch.
Absolutely. So, you know, the original name, what often happens when you start a nonprofit in the healthcare field is, you know, you find a patient who's adversely affected in a very particular way, and then you start a nonprofit that works back in that very particular way. And so it's easy to become kind of myopic in how you're affected. And so that's really, I mean, we suffered from that too. So I have familial adenomatous polyposis. We started the Familial Adenomatous Polyposis Foundation. And so whenever someone asks you what you do, you have a couple of minutes to try and really get the hooks in and get them interested in what you're doing. I spend that time trying to describe what the disease is. And so by changing it to Hereditary Colon Cancer Foundation, it really did two things. One, we recognized that the services that we wanted to provide for people with FAP would be services that anyone with a form of hereditary colon cancer could enjoy. And there are about nine different forms of hereditary colon cancer. So rather than being exclusive to one populace, we saw that we could help a larger group of people. And so there's a little twofold. We were able to grow our audience or grow our population or grow our community and grow our effect. But it also draws attention to the fact that about 10% of colon cancer is directly genetic. So in my case, people with FAP have 100% chance of colon cancer. You'll get it by around the age of 36, and you'll be dead by 40. That's just brutal fact. And what we offer is advice and resources and services and connections that can take 100% chance of colon cancer down to zero. And so we want people to realize that there are hereditary forms. It's not just sporadic. It's not just food or diet or lifestyle. There are some people that have a real predisposition, which means their children will have a predisposition and their cousins have a predisposition, and really trying to open that kind of discussion.
So your genetic markers, you say half of the offspring of a family will have 100% chance of the hereditary colon cancer. So they're genetic markers that you were tested for at age 15, and it was a prophylactic surgery or a preventative? Or
so when I was 15, this was before there was genetic marker. Like they knew some of the genetic markers, but they weren't, like, I wasn't tested. So the way the FAP works, so let's say that you are, 57 years old, and go in for a colonoscopy soon, and they have a polyp. Well, that you may have one polyp, and that polyp may have a small chance of becoming cancerous. It may go away on its own, but people with FAP, by the time they're in their late teens, their colon looks like shag carpeting. It's just polyps on top of polyps. They're literally innumerable, and every one has a chance of cancer. So you can diagnose FAP clinically, or you can do it genetically. And mine was discovered clinically through colonoscopy.
Okay.
But yes, the surgery was prophylactic.
And this is a big part of what we do, is to let people know that if they have that family history, they can either undergo genetic testing, just a simple blood test, or they can have a colonoscopy and start being monitored at 10 years younger than the earliest diagnosis of anyone in their family. And by doing that, if people are preventative, they can reduce their risk, even with FAP, from 100% chance of cancer, of colon cancer, down to zero. Hmm. I mean, there are so many scary diseases that are not actionable. This is one that is through early detection. So that's a big part of our message, is knowing your family history and knowing how to get screened and when.
It's huge. Now, I know that you're not experts in all types of cancer, but I bet you know the answer to my question. And that is, you know, about the 100% chance, of contracting the disease and that being detectable literally from birth. You know, we've heard a lot about the BRCA gene with breast cancer. I don't know if that's 100%, but it's a pretty darn good marker that you're going to get breast cancer. Until I met you guys 2 years ago, I had no idea that there was hereditary colon cancer. What other types of cancer are out there that are that 100% chance?
Well, so one of the diseases that we work with is called Lynch syndrome, The way that the gene expresses is not all these genes express in kind of different ways. And the way that Lynch does, it expresses in a way that it can affect more than just the colon. So Lynch syndrome can have you're at higher risk of skin cancer, brain cancer, stomach cancer,
ovarian cancer,
endometrial cancer, and they're trying to connect it to breast cancer. So like with Lynch, literally everybody, depending on, you know, at various stages of development. So when your brain is really active and growing, you have a higher risk of brain cancer. Whenever your brain kind of stops growing, that goes down. And whenever other body parts starts growing, those become at risk of cancer.
Those risks are, unlike FAP, which is 100%, the other cancers that are genetic, usually the range is between 5 and 60% chance. So if you have the gene, such as the BRCA gene, like you mentioned, your risk of ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer, breast cancer, those risks vary between 5 and 60%. So the important part is, once it's been identified, then these screenings. So it doesn't mean automatic hysterectomy or mastectomy, but what it does mean is regular screening so that it's detected early. And then once those markers are there that show that precancerous growths are happening, then that's the time that they advise some sort of prophylactic treatment.
What's the process for identifying the gene that carries these various forms of cancer? Because, Travis, you just said that 10% of hereditary colon cancer is in the gene, and it's in our DNA, and there must, well, maybe there isn't, but I'm assuming there's a way that we could all go get screened and find out what genes we have that could give us a predisposition, or 100%, we would know 100% that we have this gene, that we are going to eventually get this cancer or some other form of disease. So is there a method of identifying what genes we have at this point?
Not all of them, a lot. So even within our area, they're still developing. Like within the last year or so, they've found new genes that increase the risk of colon cancer. And that's one reason why they say you have a like 10%. So there was 144,000 cases of colon cancer this year. 10% were due to a genetic risk. So that's
identifiable
genetic marker. They say as much as 30% is familial. And so what they don't know is in that extra 20% between what they know and what they're not sure about, is that environmental, is that, or are those undiscovered genes? So there's still, I mean, this field isn't saturated yet. They're still discovering new genes that cause colon cancer.
And regarding the genetic testing, it's definitely controversial right now. In fact, there are companies popping up that offer a genetic test that can tell you everything that you might be at risk of in your life. And obviously there's controversy because, one, do you want to know? And what will you do with that information? Two, is your clinician, the person who ordered the test and is giving you the results, are they qualified to help you understand and interpret these results and know what to do with them? But then another thing is false hope. As Travis mentioned, not all the genes have been identified. So you might have hundreds of genes tested and think, okay, I have a high risk of this, a low risk of that, but there are all these other markers that might give you, that are not identifiable yet, and might give you false hope that you're safe and might prevent you from going in for screenings. And then there's also the issue of how it affects family planning. You know, are people going to use that information, and how might that kind of get in their heads, right, and make choices on family planning based on that? It's pretty scary. We definitely recommend that if anyone wants to have a genetic test, if they feel like they have a history, whether it's cancer or another illness that runs in their family, that they seek a genetic counselor. Their job is literally all about counseling you on the family history and understanding what tests you might want and the implications of those tests and how to read the results. So they can really help you determine, for example, one of the things they counsel on is not being tested for every single thing that's mm-hmm. every disease that's out there, but mm-hmm. let's look at your family history and narrow it down to the thing you're most concerned about. And then before we test you, let's talk about what you'll do with that information when it arrives. So genetic counselors are really key to interpreting and understanding the information.
Well, that is, Travis, go ahead.
Well, and it's a good, as she was talking, I was thinking, it's been termed the CSI effect. You know, we watch TV and within an hour, the crime lab can do all of these examinations, and they're just, you conceptualize that the piece of paper comes back and it's just cut and dry. And with genetic testing, it's not.
Mm-mm.
You can get there's a real possibility of false positives or false negatives. There's the results that come back are really complex and require bedside manner for discussions, and time to kind of discuss it with you. And that's what genetic counselors can offer. A typical session can go an hour because they do have that more nurturing side where they're working through, and they understand that you're about to get hit with a lead wrecking ball.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to bring it back to the foundation for just a second, if we can, and kind of look at the last 2 years of what's happened for the foundation and for both of you personally and your involvement in the community and with the foundation and the transformation that's happened with all those things, and then project out for the next 2 years. Is it possible to replicate the sort of success and the magnitude of growth and the way that the foundation has thrived again? And do you hope for that? Or what do you see? If you were to look out 2 years from now and tell us what you see, what would that look like for the foundation?
Well, so we've, there's like four questions there. So let me, the first 2 years, When we first came here, like I said, like you mentioned, we had one name, and we hadn't quite found our way. We recognized that there was a lot of work that could be done. There was a lot of need in this community, and we didn't have like a large chunk of money to invest into it. We didn't have a large donor base that we had like collected. These are rare diseases that people are populated across the country. So there was definitely kind of a build-in of how we can most directly affected with the resources that we had. So that it took us a while to kind of like really dial it in. And that's what's happened over the last couple of years, really dialing it in. And, you know, the effects have been both, like for me, living in an outdoor space, living in Park City, just the region we live in, is inspiring by itself. And you need that level of free thinking, expansive thought, you know, that inspiration to be able to do what we do. But then the community as well. I mean, people, when we were putting together this party that we're, you know, I think we're about to talk about, it's a cause for reflection. But what it is for me is like when you drive in from Kimball Junction, and what really draws people to this area is the nonprofits in this area. There's about 8,000 people and 100 nonprofits. And when you look around the city, you can't look anywhere and not see the effects of nonprofits, whether it's, you know, Charlie Sturgis and the Mountain Trails Foundation, which, you know, you and I enjoy, Tim, or having music every day of the week, or, you know, everything about Park City is really nonprofit led. And so that can only come from a community that's really pushed by philanthropy, whether it's, you know, the Cummings families or the, you know, the different families that have been here for a long time and given back to this community. And that's what allows us to be able to work with Katie Wright at the Community Foundation in Peregrine, or, you know, Craig McCarthy at the chamber, you know, like, it's that mindset here that's really fostered us. And it's something that is so dense and concentrated here, and that's allowed us to grow. Right now we have a really exciting program that we're working on. We've been working on developing these education and support groups at high-risk cancer clinics and expert care facilities across the country. And we just pitched a really big, audacious grant to start them at 10 institutions, right, from Columbia University over to City of Hope, MD Anderson, up to the University of Chicago, and a few stops in between, Huntsman, Cleveland Clinic. And so in 2 years, you know, we have a pilot group going at the University of Michigan. We have 10 sites that we want to bring on this year. And then in a couple of years, I like to saturate the expert care facilities and then spread it out into the outlying areas and really have this like thatched network of resources and groups for patients.
I'd like to add that how things have changed, obviously the Park City community support, as well as by bringing in the medical professionals from the Huntsman Cancer Institute onto our board. So 4 people from there came onto our board. That helped us be really directed with the services we could provide. That first year, we just saw a need, and it was very hard for us to focus. Once we brought in those medical professionals, we could see exactly how we could make an impact. So we've been really focused this past 2 years and targeted, and we've had wonderful results in the number of patients we've been able to serve. And moving forward 2 years, our big goal that we'd like to see happen is to be able to financially support patients who are in need. But that won't come for a couple more years, but that's the goal.
I heard you say you wanted to focus, and that's what you've done over the last couple of years. But Travis, I also heard you say support groups for high-risk cancers, which sounds like it may be outside of the umbrella of hereditary colon cancer.
No, well, what
or
I
is
meant,
it all under that?
It is.
Okay.
What I meant is like at high-risk cancer clinics, and typically at a high, so there are about 35. And remarkably, I was 35 before I even found out these existed. But there are about 35 or 40 like high-risk cancer clinics where you have people, you know, an oncologist, a genetic counselor, a GI, endocrinologist, a whole suite of physicians and medical professionals who know this landscape really well. And that's where we try and get our patients, and that's where we're starting our education support groups, so that patients start aligning these institutions and these expert care facilities with support and get them in there.
Okay. The high-risk clinics, who they serve are, yes, people who have a family history, but also anyone who's had a family member diagnosed with cancer under the age of 50 is also considered high risk.
Mm. Wow, we're out of time, so we better talk about this party that you're having to thank everyone who supported the hereditary colon cancer community. Your third anniversary, there was a year that you spent, as you said, before you got to Park City, 2 years here in Park City, big party at the Red Rock Brewery on Thursday. Quickly tell us about it.
Sean.
Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m., Red Rock Brewery has graciously donated space for us. We're looking forward to providing everyone with some yummy appetizers, and hopefully they'll try the great craft beer that they have to offer there at Red Rock Brewery. But we also have some fun events planned. Our party theme is Can You Feel the Love? Because we have. And we have some fun things planned, and where we hope to help everyone feel the love, so to speak, that we've received.
And I promise when you walk in that it's not going to look like Valentine, Nebraska has like erupted inside Red Rock. Like it's not going to be a bunch of red hearts everywhere, I promise. But we hope that people that maybe are going out to New Park for the music on Thursday mm-hmm. can stop by ahead of time, or maybe, you know, if you want to come by, you know, rather than making it just one thing, they can come out to see us, go over there, see Mountain Town Music and make it kind of a philanthropic night. And it's not a fundraiser, seriously, it's a party and it's a thank you.
Okay, great. Well, Shawnee and Travis, it's great to have you back on the Mountain Life. And I just want to say that I would imagine, as I'm sitting here with a lot more questions, that our listeners too have questions that may not even be related to hereditary colon cancer, but it sounds, I mean, as Park City residents and as very approachable, accessible people who really have learned a lot and are, you know, pretty, I would call you experts.
Thank you.
How can people get a hold of you just to ask questions?
Well, my cell phone number is 334-740-8657. It's on my business cards. It's on the website. I'm very accessible. I answer questions from patients across the country. But we also have a website, hcctasteguts.org. I'm usually in Atticus working or over at the library working. I'm a 6'4" redhead. I can't really be missed in Park City.
Okay, that sounds good. If you didn't catch his phone number, look for the 6'4"
I'm not bashful about it.
At Atticus. All right, Travis and Shawnee, great to speak with you. Thanks for coming by this morning.
Thank you, Lynn and Tim.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back. We're going to talk to Dr. David Kasseret. He's written a book called Stoned. And yep, it's a doctor's case for medical marijuana when we return.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank's Park City branch. We have been part of this community since 1998 as a local town bank. We take pride in giving back by supporting KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have branches in Heber City, Midway, and Park City on Deer Valley Drive. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Hi, Miles Radiman inviting you to apply for Class 22 of Park City's award-winning Community Leadership Program. This is your chance to lean in, improve your skills, network, and make a difference. Don't miss this once-a-year opportunity to apply. Adults living or working in Park City and or Summit and Wasatch Counties are eligible. Those with diverse backgrounds strongly encouraged. Applications must be received by Friday, August 21st. Applications and details are online at parkcity.org. Look at the news section on the homepage. Leadership Park City is a nonprofit and KPCW supporter.